everyone. Welcome to another episode of the YA podcast. My name is Nana and I'm on the team here at Trent. And today we're chatting about work. In the last episode, I had some time with Annette, who works for the London Institute of Contemporary Christianity. I worked so hard to nail that down. I hope Annette's proud. And we had some chats about how people do like Jesus stuff at work and how we think about work in terms of like Christianity and the kingdom, which is really, really cool. So now we're actually going to put that into a bit of practice and chat to some people who are actually working in our community and see how they do Jesus in their spaces. First, I'm going to introduce Tapua. Who is a paralegal to Tapua.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and we'll talk about what that means in a sec. I don't think everyone knows what a paralegal is. And then we also have Georgie. Say hi, Georgie.
Hello.
Who is a GP.
Trainee, but yeah.
Oh, sure.
I haven't quite got there yet, but we can go on to that.
Oh, I'm not sure if you should be on this podcast now. do you guys want to introduce yourselves? Maybe I have a fun question for you, actually.
Oh.
It's a question that me and Annette had is... When we talk about like what you do, a lot of people go straight to work and talk about what they do for work. And that's not all who you are, basically. So let's chat about what do you guys do that isn't work. Georgie, do you want to go first? Yeah.
I think I'm probably known for a few other different things. I do a little bit of church as well, a voluntary role. But I am also a tortoise mummy. I have a little pet tortoise, not your usual pet. And I also have an extortionate number of plants. So I'm also known as that sort of crazy plant lady too.
Actually, no, I've been to your house. You do have a lot of plants, actually. Yeah, I'm only now registering that.
Yeah, it is. But it's different from my other job, so it's good.
Tortoise and plant mum. Fun.
Yeah, I'll take it.
To people, what do you do that's not work?
So when I'm not working and I'm not sleeping, I will probably be making a jingle about something random that I'm doing in my everyday life.
Yes.
Yes.
I have heard this about you.
My favourite one. Mm-hmm. I have a cut through to my house.
Yes.
I don't really know how else to explain it. It's basically I can get to the main car park of my house by going through a main building, and it's like the cut through. And I have a song for that. I won't sing it.
I'm not doing it. I think you have to sing it.
Actually, I didn't think it was going there. But yeah, that's what I do when I'm not at work and I'm not sleeping.
Tapua, do you want to tell us about what your job is and what you do and what's like a normal day in the life of Tapua Kachika?
So I'm a paralegal. So I work in a solicitor's firm and I assist the solicitor in all of the cases that he does. A lot of my role is client facing. So I speak to the clients, take down their initial instructions. So it goes from the initial stage up until the final hearing for the client's case. We work in public law and human rights, so it's all within that context. And most of our clients are asylum seekers, and most of our challenges concern asylum support. A normal day just looks like it varies from what stage we are in. So whether we're at the initial stage, so that's in instructions with the client, whether we're in the middle stage, so it might be court forms, might be a witness statement, or whether we're at the end stage, so attending court, speaking to the barristers. Thus.
What about you, Georgie? What's your job? What's a regular day as a GP trainee, apparently?
Yeah, GP trainee. So it's a long stint to get to this point. And I have been doing some part-time work, which has added to the time. But I came here for uni in 2011. So I spent 5 years at uni. And then for the last 8 years, I've been slowly working my way towards ending up as a GP. And I'm currently in my final year of that. So my final year. So working in a GP practice, doing what people presume GPs do. There's rogue opinions on what we do. So that's what I'm doing. So I do that part-time. So I'm there 4 days a week, and then I help out doing a bit in church, the other part of it. So it's a part-time life, bit of work-life balance, which is quite nice.
That's very strong. So I appreciate our part-time people out there, because I'm also a part-time galley. Yeah. I don't know why I chose to say it like that. It was very Gen Z. I thought it'd be cool to chat about like how you guys got into what you do, because I think we've recently been chatting about quite a bit with young adults about like calling and gifting and how that plays a role in what you do. So Georgie, do you want to chat about how you got into what you do?
Yeah, I wasn't one of those people that was destined always to be a doctor. I actually wanted to be a vet, but then I don't know how old I was, but some friends pointed out that I was quite allergic to quite a lot of animals. So maybe that wasn't the wisest option. And then I think someone just suggested medicine, and I thought, well, let's see what happens. I went to quite a small school, and I quickly discovered it was quite competitive to get into and quite difficult. And I didn't have much of a faith at the time, but I did believe in something. And I remember thinking, well, if I get in, it's a sign that I should do it. And Nottingham became my only offer in the end. So off I came to Nottingham, and I'm still here. So it wasn't something that I was absolutely, I guess, felt called to do in that sense. But looking at it now, I don't know what else I would do. I love working with people. I love helping people. I love kind of the sciencey background as well, which is a huge part of it. So I think it does make sense now, but I think at the time it wasn't like this is definitely what I'm going to do. And it might not be something I do forever. I hold it quite lightly. I will go wherever God calls, but I think for now, this is what I'm doing. But I think the work-life balance of being part-time has helped that to kind of work out what other things I might want to do alongside it, which is interesting.
Just a quick follow-up question.
Yeah.
Like, in the sort of it just falling into place, is there an aspect to which you think your giftings have played a role? Like, what you're, like, gifted for and what you're good at?
Yeah, I think so. I think, again, it's not what you think about when you're 16. Like, when you're choosing A-levels or whatever you're doing or choosing what on earth you're going to do, it's not on your list at all of, maybe some people ask you what you're good at, but you're not really thinking about it. I think it wasn't until I was in my 20s and I looked at this job that I've landed myself in as I finished uni and suddenly working as a doctor at kind of, 22, 23. And I was like, am I qualified to do this? Mm-hmm. Have I got what's needed? But I think as my confidence grew and as I got a bit older, a bit maturer, then actually I have realised I do love chatting to people. I do love coming alongside people, helping them. And just being there, being a source of comfort for someone is great. And I think the other flip side of, particularly of GP life, is a lot of paperwork, a lot of administration type of things. And that is something that I've learned is a gift.
Oh,
and
really?
God gives us those gifts, and that's okay. And that's great. And
you have that gift?
I love a spreadsheet. I love organization. I love a bit of paperwork. So actually, it's I've naturally ended there, but I do think God has given me a skill set that does match, thankfully, where I'm currently working.
What about you, Tapua? Like, how did you get into what you do, and what role did, like, gifting and calling play in that?
So I think at school I was quite academic, definitely loved history, definitely loved English literature. The idea of kind of forming like a view and then using the materials around you to kind of substantiate your view, like to evidence it. So I think that's always kind of hinted towards, like, maybe I should go into law. So I think for me, first it started off just as the academic challenge. And I think it was when I was at university and this whole idea of to, like, build up your CV, you've got to do some extra curriculars. And then I joined a society where we did a lot of work with refugees. We were part of a befriending program. And I think that's when I was like, actually, all this, like, I don't know, like, academic or intellectual side of things, even though that's exciting, it can actually be used and help somebody else, if that makes sense. Like, I think there are ways where you can use it and you kind of have that satisfaction for yourself, but there's the additional satisfaction from, actually, I've used it for somebody who wouldn't otherwise been able to do anything. So yeah, that's kind of how I went into law and then went to university. And I knew, because obviously in law, you either decide whether you want to be a solicitor and a barrister or a barrister, so more court base or office base. And again, it was the inclination more towards actually meeting clients, hearing their stories, and kind of helping them, like, draft all of that into their case. That was more, I think, more aligned with kind of my strengths as well. Mm-hmm. So I think part of that, I think gifting kind of links to just natural inclinations, like where you naturally find yourself. And I find myself more in conversation rather than a barrister who is more in declaration, who, like, presents something. Yeah, sure. So that's kind of how I found gifting kind of leading and linking into my occupation.
It's quite interesting to think about how, yeah, like even just having giftings for that and thinking about that as, like, it's not just a path that you just follow because it's the one laid before you, but actually, like, there is a call on that, there is, like, a heart pull towards that. So that's really, really cool. But no, I think it's worth talking about, like, how, like, jobs, and especially if it's a more demanding job, how it can play a role in your identity and how you see yourself. And so I want to chat to you guys about that. The interview are keen to answer this question first. What role do you think your jobs play on your identity, and how have you impacted that?
I think it's a really tricky question. I think especially in a job where it's a sort of jobs that maybe you tell children, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, you're going to be a doctor. You're going to have a doctor's set or a nurse's set or whatever. Mm. A very kind of predefined role. And I think it's tricky for that not to end up being part of your identity. One of the things that I've considered quite a lot since I started working, and a lot of my friends will laugh at this because I talk about it quite a lot, is I don't know if I've done it on this podcast already, but I try not to use the, it's so small, but not use the phrase, I am a doctor. I try to say I work as a doctor. Because I think it is a part of my life, and it is valuable, and I can see how I am part of the kingdom in that as well, but it isn't everything. It isn't everything to do with me. It's not, oh, well, that's what she's going to be defined by. Because if there was a season in life when I wasn't working as that, then actually, if your identity is surrounded by it, then that crumbles, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. When you retire, what on earth do you do? Are you a retired doctor? And I'm like, no, I don't. I don't want to be defined always by a role. So I try and say that I work as a doctor. That is part of it. And I think the other aspect of that is being part time. I think that has helped me have a bit more of a balance, because it means it doesn't take over the majority of my week. And I'm thankful that I have the opportunities that I can have that balance at this time in life. It might not always be the case, but right now I'm enjoying being able to have that balance and kind of stop it becoming all encompassing. Mm. But I do respect, I know quite a lot of doctors that work full time, and a lot of Christian doctors that work full time, and I respect them a lot, because it you can't, to do the job well and in certain specific roles, you kind of have to be part full time to do it. And I have a lot of respect for them, but I think for me, I'm thankful that I can have a bit of a balance within it, so it doesn't become everything.
Mm-hmm. That's good. What about you,
T? Yeah, I agree. I think it is quite difficult just to separate what you do from your identity. And I think in a legal field where a lot of things are reputation based, like there's so much competition out there, like just outside competition with peers and students and then just newly qualified, there's competition between firms, like, and obviously clients can choose who they go to. So reputation is a really big part of your work and like who what you're reputed to be. So I think that can be difficult to kind of juggle, because I will see trying to pour a lot of myself into my own reputation, like I want and then having to correct myself, am I doing this again to please my boss in terms of pleasing man, or am I doing this, you know, because I want to do well at something that God's placed me to do. Yeah. And it's that having to reflect and check myself as to why am I doing this, because it can be unhealthy, I think, because of the competitive nature of the environment. You can start to see yourself being as good as your work is. Does that make sense? And that's not how God looks at us, you know?
Can I chip in there? I think the other thing, especially if you go to uni and you do a course, doesn't need to be one of these two jobs, but a course that almost lends itself to a job at the end of it, I think it's really hard not to end up on this conveyor belt of you must be doing the next thing. Part of that competition that you've been talking about, we are in a society that tells you, you must be doing the next thing. You must be earning more. You must be getting the next higher position. You must be building. And I think that's not always the best for us. Sometimes it's okay to step off the conveyor belt for a bit, or to go off and do something else and come back to it. I think there are other routes to it, but I think particularly university can have that. School onwards, from exams onwards, it's the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And I think that can be quite negative, and it can really impact how you see yourself and your sense of worth within that as well. And it's totally okay for that not to be the case, to take some time to think about it first.
That's really good.
Very true.
But yeah, okay, on to the next question, which is quite cool. This might be a bit sensitive, so let me know what you think. What role does money and finances play in how you view your job and yourself?
Yeah, I think just linking to this whole conveyor belt thing, I think a lot of what we're told when we're at universities in the legal context is just eventually, like, the end goal is like becoming partner of a firm and earning so much. And just what Georgie was saying about this conveyor belt system, kind of causing you to feel like, yeah, you need to be on the next thing. It's kind of fed into just how I view money and finances, because I think the danger of that conveyor belt kind of mindset is, if you're not where you need to be, if you're not making the money that you had been told is like the post-grad average salary, or this, I don't know, 3 years post-qualification average salary, if you're not making that, you feel like you're failing. Sure. You feel like you're not on the right course. And that's not true. Like, obviously, God establishes all of our steps. Mm. And the difficulty for me that's been is that I'm coming up to, I think, 2 years post my master's qualification. And I'm in a role where initially I had that mentality of, I won't be in this role for more than 2 years, because again, it's not what I'm meant to be making. Again, meant in quotations, meant to be making post qualification. And it's difficult because I'm in an environment where actually most people, when you, like, even family, extended family members, most people, when you say, oh yeah, I'm in law, they're like, oh, so you've got the big bucks. And it's like, wait, I'm actually not in a sector that does that. And it feels like, am I not doing it well? Sure. So it's quite a difficult kind of, I don't know, thought process that I have to balance between not making how much I am making the focus, not making it the be on an end all. And like, obviously there is an extent where we have to be able to live. And but it's the idea of actually knowing who provides and ultimately where our living and our sustenance comes from. And yeah, trying to shift that focus is quite hard for me, but it's a journey.
What do you think, Georgie?
Yeah, I really agree. It is really tricky. I think, yeah, I've experienced the same, this sort of attitude of, oh, you're a doctor, you must be learning loads of money. But I think, I don't know, I'm sure lots of people are aware that there's been lots of strikes and issues within the NHS over the last few years. We're not going to get into that today. But it's all a bit controversial at the moment. But if anyone listening is considering going into medicine for the money, that's not the route. There are other jobs if you really want to earn the money. There are other routes around it. But yeah, it is hard because I think people have those presumptions about you and then build their impression on you based on that. And I think that is really hard. And again, my attitude has always been, well, if I can pay the bills, that's kind of I want to be able to pay the bills. And it is tricky. There are jobs where there is a lot of responsibility. Like, it is medicine, any role within it is a very demanding job. It's emotionally challenging. It is hard. And there is an immense responsibility that you have with your patients. And so you can't put a price on that. And I think people trying to, and I think that's why historically people in the medical sector have earned proportionally more to other sectors in the past, because people have tried to put a number on it. And I think that number is probably equaled out a little bit more. But having more money doesn't make it a less demanding job or anything like that. And some people might say, well, it means you can enjoy your time off more. But I'm like, well, I don't want to work simply to earn more money to enjoy the time off that I have. Like, you want to be able to enjoy the work you do. There has to be a bit of a balance. You don't want to always be living for the weekend. Actually, that's not what it's about. We're called to work. God wants us to work. And actually that includes trying to find ways of enjoying that throughout it, and it not always being this end point of earning more money. And I think it is, but it is tricky. And I think it has formed my decisions at different points. And I think for me, trying not to chase that dream again was going part-time to kind of break that and be like, oh, actually, I'm going to reduce my salary so that I can do other things, because that's more important to me right now, and not getting burnt out or exhausted from full-time work, because I worked full-time for a few years and it was pretty draining. All of that shift work was very challenging, and it wasn't for me to be able to continue that at full-time. So actually, that's come at a cost, but I do feel I am really fortunate that I do have a job that earns enough that I can be part-time. Like, I fully appreciate that. Not everyone's able to do that, and I'm immensely grateful for that. But it's an ongoing conversation across the news at the moment anyway. Yeah. So we'll see what happens in the future of the NHS.
Yep, that's what this podcast is about.
Join us next time.
But no, that was really helpful, you guys. That was really great insight that you both have. Yeah, and I think you're right. Like, it is an ongoing struggle, and there isn't going to be some boom, I figured it out once, the end. So I think it's really cool for you guys to talk into that. Actually, I still have to think these through and ask these questions and go through that. But yeah, next question I have is, how does your faith impact your decisions at work? Because obviously you both work in quite sensitive fields that mean that you have to make quite hard decisions. So yeah, what role does your faith play in that?
Yeah, so I think my faith, it overshadows the understanding that a solicitor's firm is primarily a business. And I think something that I wasn't really conscious of at the beginning is that, yes, I'm in a compassionate area of law, but ultimately my firm is a business, and they will do business needs, they will prioritize business needs first. And that's quite difficult when my faith would tell me otherwise. It will tell me to prioritize Jesus and to prioritize the things of Jesus first. So I think essentially what I'm trying to say is, sometimes choosing to be Jesus and choosing to act out my faith goes against business needs. Just a recent example would be, we'll get incoming phone calls that are kind of sent to us, and then I have to pick it up and answer it. And within 10 seconds, I can know, or at least suss out, whether this person, we can help them, whether or not they are going to be likely to be a client. And that's something we just learned to do in order to just prioritize time and to work efficiently. And yeah, within 10, 15 seconds of her saying what was going on, I was like, yeah, this person won't be a client. And it was so hard for me to do this, but I listened to what she had to just say. And I was fighting myself when I was doing this. So I don't say this to say that it came easy, but she spoke for 13 minutes. And all of those 13 minutes, I was like, I know we can't help her. I know we can't help her, but I felt a pull to just keep listening and keep listening. Essentially, I give her the advice that that I could give, and ultimately she had to go and do other things and we couldn't assist her. But I think because she ended the conversation in something that was really, I understood why I felt that pull to just actually listen. She was like, thank you so much for listening to me. I know that you can't help me, but I just really appreciated that you took the time to listen to me. And I was like, oh, okay. It was for her to actually just say what she needed to say. And that's kind of when I feel like it's that tension and that challenge to put your faith first. Mm. Like, Jesus would have listened and probably done a lot more in that situation. But yeah, I think that's how my faith in one example kind of changes my decisions at work. You know, I have just said, I'm sorry to cut you short there, but etc. And then the phone call ends within a minute. But in that instance, I feel like just her comment at the end was actually, this is important, you know? It's important to stop.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're talking about, working for a business, because I do think at the moment I'm not working for a GP practice, which will then be essentially a business. Up until now, I feel quite protected in this massive public sector, and I'm immensely thankful that the NHS is a public sector and it is free, because it then gets really tricky and really pulls on your heartstrings, I think, and it does already. I think, yeah, bringing Jesus into the workplace, it's tricky. You can't actively share your faith kind of at work. There is a legal parameter around that means that we can't. But it doesn't mean I don't pray. I think as the years have gone by and my faith has matured at the same time as I've been working, I pray more and more. I think even just praying to kind of keep going for the day, but also just for patience. Like, in my head, I'm generally, there's been times medicine gives you a very, I guess, a unique opportunity to be with people at their most vulnerable points in their life, and could be the worst moments they ever had. Like, I've held hands with someone as they've passed away, or in other circumstances, I've helped deliver a baby, or I've had to tell someone else that they've got cancer, or tell someone else that their relative's just died. Like, you, I've been there for some very significant moments for many different people, and it is a privilege to be there. Yeah. And I think I do see my faith play out in that, and it is part of it is just being a, you know, good person, but it's being that considerate person. It is listening, as you were just talking about, to be like being there, being a source of comfort for someone is a privilege, and it is just doing what Jesus would have done. And I think there are aspects when you feel helpless. Medicine, whilst we might be in the 21st century, we're not fully there yet. We haven't got the answer. We haven't got the cure for everything. And there are moments when you are helpless. So actually, all I can do in that moment, whilst I can't overtly pray for them in front of them, I will be in my head. And there has been multiple times when I've done that. On the flip side, there are a couple of occasions where someone has shared with me that they are a Christian, and that gives you kind of a bit of an in, and you're allowed in that circumstance. You're just being another Christian alongside them. And there's two situations, and I won't share them in this, but that I've stuck in my mind of opportunities where I've been able to just sit and pray with someone, and the impact that's had, and them knowing that, oh, their doctor is a Christian too, is actually quite a privilege. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really thankful that I've been able to do that, and I can see, yeah, seeing the kingdom come in that way is special. Mm-hmm. In what is already, it's a broken world, and we don't always have the answers, and sometimes it is just really desperately sad. But, and I think the other side is who you're looking after. And I think I've done a bit of stuff within the compassion at Trent, and I think that has left me with a bit of a broken heart for those people that are on the margins, that yes, they can still get access to healthcare, but it doesn't mean it's as straightforward for them as it might be for those of us that can get a car or use public transport to get to the doctors or get to the hospital. Not everyone can do that. And so actually there are still inequalities across health massively in this country. And it to be able to be a part of those people's lives, like the GP practice that I'm working at the moment does a clinic once a week for refugees in a hotel on the outskirts of Nottingham. And to be able to be a part of that is quite special, actually.
Oh, guys, that's actually so good. Like, it's such a... I just such like a faith builder to hear about the way that you guys like get to bring God into your like situations, and like it doesn't have to be some huge like I saw a miracle happen at work the other day. Actually, I listened to someone. Mm-hmm. I got to hold someone's hand. I got to be like, yeah, comfort and peace and love in that person's situation. And I think that's like this kind of stuff I chat with Annette of like that is just as valuable. So that's really, really cool. Are there any final thoughts or advice maybe you guys have for someone who's thinking about a similar career or who's in a similar career?
Yes, I'll start. I think if you're thinking about going into law, I think it's something that I think if you do it in your own strength, it is so hard. I think like we've spoken about the competition, and we've spoken about how it can warp your identity. So my piece of advice is with everything, do it with the Spirit. And I think more particularly work on the fruit of, is patience a fruit? It is a fruit, right?
Love, joy, no, peace, patience.
Yeah.
Peace.
I think that's the fruit that I have to lean on the most. You'll have to be patient in terms of the length of your degree, and patient in terms of, when you'll get the, for example, the training roles, you'll have to be patient with clients. So I just feel like, yeah, work on how much you rely on the Spirit, because that's how you're going to get through it. Mm. It's probably what I'll do, what I'd say.
That's such a good answer. Can I just steal it?
Yeah.
I think
it's from the Bible, so
yeah, it's true. Can't go wrong. I think, yeah, similar with medicine. I think you do. You need to, you can't do it in your own strength. You're so right. Because it's a long journey. Mm. It's a long journey, and it's quite a commitment. But I think with medicine, if you're someone who wants to be there in those vulnerable moments with people and just be that caring person, then it is immensely rewarding across what is, it is a very challenging job. And I think let's not downplay that. I think both of these jobs in these roles are hard work. Mm. It does require a hard work, but the reward is big. And that is wonderful, being able to be a part of the kingdom and seeing what God is doing on earth is amazing.
Oh, that's good. Oh, thank you guys so much for coming. I really enjoyed this chat.
Thank you.
Oh, But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed it too, those of you listening. And yeah, like, go out there and do the stuff. yeah, we'll be releasing some more episodes in the next few weeks, so look out for those. But for now, that's goodbye from us. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye.